everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. We're here to talk about more of episode one of Freak Show. Oh my God, there's so much of episode one of Freak Show. I'm here with Miss Shadow Lovely and Slow Beef, and I think since it's part two, we just get to it. We ended on a weird house party where a bunch of ladies were being introduced to the crab man. Like
Lobster Boy.
Big style.
Right,
Lobster
yeah.
Boy
yeah.
parentheses real. Like, that's not me making a funny name for him. That's his name in the
yeah.
in the show. Unfortunately.
Yeah,
also, like, so it is like a weird like dinner snack party at some lady's house. But like my thing is like I think what they were trying to get at or like trying to like I don't know, like not parody, but like what they're referencing is like those I can't remember, like True Romance or whatever they're called, where like a lady, it's like an MLM with like sex toys, where like a lady will be like, ooh, we're gonna have a true romance party, and it was like a very like not taboo, but like, well, I guess maybe taboo, like it was like a little like a little hee hee, like middle America like thing that housewives do or did. I don't know if they still do it today. I don't know if that's still a thing, but like my question is, that's like an MLM and you're not like using the sex toys on each other. It's not like an orgy at a
yeah.
at a pure romance party. How did the conversation for this go?
Are you telling me they don't have
go?
Free samples?
Yeah.
They don't have free samples
they
here?
Frown,
yeah,
they
you don't
frown
get to like have a
it.
Little taste beforehand?
They really they
okay,
frown
good.
On it.
Not a Costco. Wow, what a crazy Costco this would be, huh?
I was thinking they were doing like the whole like Tupperware party, Amon party kind of thing. Like, which yeah, is basically like the precursor, the MLM stuff, and like
yeah.
But you know, twisted because it's horror.
That's
know.
What I'm saying. But like, how but, did the conversation? Because like with an MLM, you're like you're given like a script where you're like, oh, like kind of drop this on your lady friends and see how they feel about it. How did they pitch this?
So you come over, you'll bring deviled eggs, I'll make pasta salad, and we'll let a man put his deformed hands in us. That's the party. That's the pitch. And it's like,
okay, Meredith, where did you find this man? Don't worry about it.
Like, the closest circus. Thing I can think of is like, I had a meeting with some friends where I just aged like a really big, high quality piece of beef. And then we just like met up and had steaks and grilled and hung out and talked. I guess in some weird lateral thinking puzzle kind of way, you could be like, well, he's just the stake of getting finger banged. He's just like an aged finger banging.
This is the primo. But like, how did she also pitch it to the lady who's hosting it? How did she pitch it to him? I mean, later, like, he'll kind of say that, like, this is a thing he does. So I reckon he does the pitching, like, hey, lonely housewife, would you like to invite a bunch of your friends over and I can finger bang them? Because I can't imagine it goes the other way too often. That's okay. This is another thing. Can we just, may I get on a soapbox for a second? Remember in the beginning of this episode, our last episode, how we were talking about how every single person in the 1950s or 60s or whenever this takes place sees a pair of conjoined twins that are conjoined at the torso, so essentially just a woman with two heads, and treats her like she's the fucking devil and literally vomits. A doctor literally vomits upon seeing this normal woman with two heads. I feel like that same demographic of people probably aren't going to let someone with a physical deformity like his finger bang him. I feel like they would be equally like, absolutely not, you're not a person, as though all of the other people in this show treat every... That's, spoiler
yeah,
alert,
I
that's
mean,
kind of the plot of the whole season is people aren't very nice to these people in the circus. Believe it or not, they're
I
not
mean,
very kind.
No, you're right, because it's a tough sell even with regular hands. You know, like, hey, you wanna get finger banged by a lobster? Like, no, I don't. I know it now that you mention it. That wasn't on my bucket list.
Some
but.
Man approaches you after, like, I don't know, like Cirque du Soleil, just like some dude in a leotard, and he's like, hey, how about me and you and 16 of your closest friends hang out at your house and I'll finger blast every single one of them.
She's like eating lobster and then she's like, wait a minute, that guy at the circus could probably hit my G-spot. You know, like, it doesn't fly.
Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. So that's that is unfortunately like a pivotal plot point of this character is that he does these and he doesn't want to be known as the guy with lobster claws who finger blasts women. He wants to be a normal sex worker who is respected, I guess. Immediately prior to this happening, though, in the end of our last episode, we also, like, kind of, it's so weird how quickly they, like, gloss over it, because they truly do just, like, fire it off really quickly, and if you weren't paying attention, you would think it was just, like, a way for us to know that Elsa's not above, like, banging the landlord. But like the crux of the, or like the plot, the current conflict of the show and the like foundation of the conflict is that the circus, that Elsa's circus is failing, and they can't afford to keep the doors open. And so they're trying
to lose
like,
the orphanage.
Yeah, they're gonna lose the orphanage.
They gotta keep the orphanage open. Yeah. Oh, I'm getting past the note. It's not an orphanage. Never mind.
Yeah. So like, and when I say they like gloss over it, I mean that scene where like the guy comes and is like, I want to give my giant empty lot where you have your tent pitched to a person who does sermons because they pay up front. And then Elsa like gave him a beej or something. It's not clear what, but gave him like a sexual favor, and then he extended their lease like a few months. But like also in that same scene, she's like, "We paid already," so I don't know what's going on there.
What if she got like the lobster, like Evan Peters to like he can hit prostates too. Don't worry. Like, all right, fine.
Hey, buddy, this is really gonna blow your mind. It's what, like 1958? We don't really even know about this. Well, I'm sure we did know about it, but like we weren't talking about it yet. Like, you're gonna love this.
I can thumb your balls, no problem.
Later on, under every single tweet with more than 2,000 likes, someone's going to have an image of an object that looks just like Evan Peters' claw hands.
Yeah. So, yeah, that is, in case it was not clear, because, again, that is a 35-second scene in the middle of this enormously long episode. Second longest episode in the history of American Horror Story, by the way.
Yeah, you feel it, too. Towards the end, you feel it.
I would argue you feel it the entire time. It is. Not-
I'd argue these broads feel it, right?
Hey. And there are so many points. The thing that was the most frustrating for me is there were so many points, and I believe me, I'm going to talk about one in a few minutes because there's one like that comes up pretty quick that like were perfect endings for the episode, like 50 minutes into the episode. So it's like, we did not have an hour and a half worth of television in like worth of stuff in here. We could have stopped at many different points.
The old Lord of the Rings problem, right?
Yeah. I will say, if your piece of media that is allegedly like an episode of a TV show is over an hour long and it's like a drama and you have a musical number, you need to cut the musical number. We'll get there. It's like, oh, man.
And man, did they really fortunately. OK, so I do have to confess something because I did realize something the other day in between us recording the last episode. And now I had a realization because I put my Spotify on shuffle for like all of the music I've ever heard ever. Period since I've had my Spotify account. And I realized that at a certain point in time, I added several songs from the American Horror Story Freak Show soundtrack. And it made me realize that A, there are some actual like kind of bangers in Freak Show. I think they're just covers of like songs that were already bangers. For example, the one that we will hear at the end of this episode. But also it made me realize we are very not done with musical numbers for this season.
Great.
That was kind of a big element of Freak Show, turns out, is the musical numbers. There's a few of them. Boy, howdy. Well, I have to imagine they got probably some positive reception in the previous season with Coven, with having Stevie Nicks show up and do a song. I'm sure some people liked that.
These guys did like Glee or some shit, right? Like that was like the whole thing.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah, so like maybe it was just like, I don't know. Do musicals.
Do you think
people like those?
We're good at appropriating real people in fiction and music.
Do you think when they were writing American Horror Story, the like urge to write in a musical number like from Glee was calling to them, like the Green Goblin mask in Spider-Man?
Yeah, absolutely. Come on, just one song and dance. Yeah. It won't hurt it.
Sing, make them sing. They want to hear the songs. Make them sing. Make them do a big dance number to something by Katy Perry.
So
Seven Wonders, write it in. Sorry, go ahead.
Do a cover like played exclusively on like plastic cups. They love that. People love that.
Also, Stevie Nicks is a witch too. Just we're going for it. All right.
In Freak Show, also. No, I'm just kidding. She's not in Freak Show. I wish she was. I think Stevie Nicks should have been in this season too. So I guess to start off, because it goes from the fingering party to just a completely unrelated scene of being back in the hospital, where all the lights are out, like it's Silent Hill for some reason. They do that a lot with hospitals. They seem to think that hospitals are dark all the time when it's not daytime. when the sun goes down, everyone's asleep at the hospital. Everyone knows this. There is a lights out curfew at every hospital.
It goes without saying. We've all been in hospitals. We've all felt around for our rooms in the front desk, you know?
Yeah, if you
are shining a flashlight in the nurse's face.
Listen, if you have an emergency after 10 p.m., fuck you. Like, we're not, that's not our problem. We're closed.
We gotta sleep too, lady.
Night shift, never heard of her. All the lights are off, and Elsa is like pushing the twins around in a wheelchair for some reason. It's like unclear what they were doing, but she's like pushing her around in a wheelchair, pushing them around in a wheelchair. And Elsa's like, "So, tell me about what happened with your mom, your terrible tragedy." And Dot, the kind of like cynical one, I think Dot's the cynical one. I don't know. We'll find out in a second. I'll remember in a second. Is like, "Oh yeah, it was a robbery that went bad." And like they're really dog shit at lying. And then Bette, the kind of like bubbly airheaded one, is like, "Let me add a bunch of useless details that will make this even less believable." And like Elsa's just kind of listening and like nodding along. And then she's like, "Oh, okay. That is the plot to the movie Gaslight. So you might not want to tell that to the police." And Bette's like, "Fuck." Bette does not say fuck, but I imagine that if they would allow Bette to say fuck in the show, she would say fuck at this point. So yeah, Bette just like, they really want you to know that like Bette, the kind of ditzy one, is very, very like obsessed with media and like movies and movie stars and like musicians. Very, very like akin to Elsa, because Elsa's also more on the performer side, but is also very Hollywood focused and stuff like that. So Bette knows a lot about movies and is quoting about movies and talking about actors. And she has that kindred kind of spirit with Elsa, whereas Dot doesn't care. She just doesn't participate in most of these conversations. And then that after, well, like kind of Elsa says at the end of that scene, she's like, "Yeah, that was the plot to Gaslight. I know you're lying. So maybe don't tell that to the police because they are going to question you. Also, I'm not going to rat you out. I just think it's important that you know you cannot be doing that shit in front of the cops. Zip it when it comes to the cops. Zip it. Say less. Or you're going to go to jail, and then you're going to get probably executed." I don't know if it's now or later, but they do have a conversation because this is the ongoing issue in this episode, is that obviously the twins are lying. And it's hard enough to keep your story straight when you do a crime when you're one person. But when you're two people, it becomes infinitely more hard to keep your story straight, evidently.
Unless you can speak telepathically to each other. But that's...
That's crazy slow
that
beef.
That can't happen.
Oh, wait.
That's crazy slow beef. People can't
haven't
do that.
Haven't they already done that, too? Don't they do that in this scene? Like, literally as one of them is, like, making up and adding details, the other one's going, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, shut the fuck up, in her, presumably in the other one's head.
Yeah.
Wait, hold but, like, on.
they live together. Like, they're an adult. They're adults, so you'd think they would have been used to this by now. Like, surely as kids they lied about things.
Yeah.
And you know, it's like, okay, you tell the story, and then, like, the other one could, like, think that, you know what I mean? Come on. First
also,
rodeo, get out of here.
Like, I know I've already, and I'm going to probably every time, but I know I've already complained about the issue with the telepathic twins, because, like, even if we're suspending disbelief, even if we were to believe that conjoined twins can speak telepathically, which is not a thing, in case you're curious, it is not a thing, and there is no scientific evidence to prove that unless they are connected at the brainstem, that there is any, like, communication between conjoined twins in that manner.
Yeah.
But,
like, at most, you would probably get, what, like, occasional cross nerve signals?
Yes.
Stuff like
that? Yeah, like, if one of them eats something, it goes to both of their stomach, and both of their brains receive the information that they have eaten food. That's about the extent of it. But my thing is, like, so if we are entertaining the idea that because they share a body, they can also, like, essentially read each other's thoughts, I guess. Like, well, that's my thing. It's like, if you, it doesn't just go one way. You can't just send. You have to also receive, which means there's an open line of communication at all time between the two of them. I can't imagine one of them can just, like, go into their mind palace. Because, like, they kind of even mentioned that when Elsa's being, like, weird about the sex stuff. What's her name? Bet is like, oh, yeah, sometimes when I'm fiddling myself, like, she pretends that she can't feel it, and, like, doesn't like it, and that she, like, she's not into it. And I'm like, so she can't, like, just go into her mind palace and, like, pretend that she does not feel or, like, hear Bet's thoughts or whatever. But, like, wouldn't they just be, A, constantly hearing each other's stream of consciousness? Because I know not everybody has, like, an inner dialogue or an inner, like, monologue, but I feel like most people do have a stream of consciousness.
So I think what we're supposed to assume is that they both have their own separate brains, but there is a spot in the middle where they can send thoughts to, like, meet at an interchange at a crossroads and be like, ah, very good, sir. And then, like, go across over there. So you can still have your own separate thoughts. But, like, if they send over a visitor, you have to be like, oh, one second. let me get a messenger sent over, sir. That kind of thing. Because, yeah, otherwise, this would just be fucking maddening. It would just be absolutely ludicrous trying to deal with having two people's thoughts all the time.
Well, not only that, you do essentially have to also consider that they could just also read each other's minds at that point. Because, like, I don't think there's a way to, like, put up a firewall and be like, no, you can't read my mind right now. You can't hear my thoughts right now. Like,
oh, I see you haven't caught up on neurology in the 1960s.
Yeah, I am a little behind on my reading.
So it's called a firewall, right?
Yeah.
It is that some traffic is allowed through, but not all traffic.
Damn.
Brain IP whitelisting, exactly.
Exactly. Yes. It's networking, and I would make more networking jokes, but I'm already out of my depth. So I will stop.
Something, something, Matt type, something, something.
God damn it, I'm front end. I don't know anymore.
all that to say that, like, you'd think that hypothetically, and we'll get to this more in depth when we actually, I think they do talk about it later, but, like, it does raise, I don't know, in my mind, the idea, the concept that, yeah, if you wanted to, like, get away with a crime, like murder or something, being a conjoined twin that allegedly can read each other's minds freely with complete control over when they can communicate is, like, ideal, because there's not really a legal system that can justify executing two people when only one did the crime. So you're not going to get the death penalty, probably. And then
counterpoint,
also,
it's
yeah,
it's Florida though.
Oh yeah, I always forget that this is set in Florida. I always forget the season.
But sorry,
in Florida.
Notwithstanding, yeah. No, but you're
famously
generally,
where
you're,
famously where they cut that baby in half so both of them could have half a baby. Florida.
I was gonna say the Bible, King Solomon
no,
in the Bible.
Florida.
Yeah.
No, in the Bible they stopped. They were like, let's not cut this baby in half. Florida, they were like, we gotta get this shit settled. Get that big old cleaver over here.
Why did that liberal Bible stop before it got good?
No follow through. Isn't that what Kathy Bates' character was upset about in the last season or something? I don't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I can't stand you elves. All flash and no substance. Something like that. Yeah,
yeah, that sounds about right. So that's all we get of that scene. And then somewhere else, a guy we've never seen before gets up in the middle of the night to piss and gets fucking murdered by Twisty the Clown. So Twisty has now, in the span of 20 minutes, escalated from just kind of stalking teens at the lake that want to bang outside in the woods to breaking and entering into people's homes. I say homes, if I remember correctly, I think it's just this one, which is wild. I think he only does it this one time, and I think it's only this one.
This feels like he was experimenting. Like, he's been a serial killer, and he's, like, looking to branch out, and he, like, tries this, and he's just like, ooh, I don't think my audience is gonna love this. Just, like, went back to just going outside again.
Yeah, he's like, wait, wasn't I doing this because I like doing the clown thing? Like, I started with, like, the juggling bit with the other people. People who are getting up in the middle of the night to piss, not as receptive to juggling, it turns out. and yeah, this guy just gets fucking totaled by Twisty the Clown. And then, like, they use a narrative device where they're showing us what's happening, but they're having the characters in the hospital, like, also learning about it by listening to the radio broadcast telling them what's going on. So, like, basically what we're seeing is the thing that happened, but it's also being narrated by the radio, which is weird. I love it when my my show comes with a non-optional commentary track that just tells me what I'm looking at.
It's like a Let's Play, but for American Horror Story. It's perfect.
Yeah, like, you know how, like, some shows people don't like because they hold the audience's hand and they treat them like they're stupid? I can't really think of a thing that illustrates that better than showing what's going on the screen and also having someone say what's going on the screen, even though it's really obvious.
The famous writing advice, show and tell. Yes.
And tell, and tell, and tell, and tell.
Right.
Be an audiobook in visual form, even.
If you do nothing else, right.
So, like, we're kind of cutting back and forth between the nurses and the doctors, hearing the radio broadcast and then actually seeing Twisty do the thing. There's not enough in this scene that this couldn't have just been two scenes that happened one after the other. The scene of Twisty doing this and the scene of them hearing about it literally could have been right after each other and taken, I think, roughly around the same amount of time instead of cutting back and forth. But yeah, Twisty also kills that guy's wife, and then he steals their kid. Also feels a little off normal, off script from his usual clown bit. But he has stolen a child who looks to be roughly like 10, maybe 11 years old. That's enough about that, I guess. We then cut to Dot and Bette also hearing the radio broadcast about Twisty. And, like, one of them or both of them hatch this idea while listening that they are going to frame, because the way they're talking about it on the radio, obviously there's no witnesses because everybody dies. They don't know it's a clown. They're all points bulletin. There's a fucked up clown afoot. They're like, there's an unknown serial killer afoot. And it kind of sounds on the radio like they're already maybe attributing Dot and Bette's mother's dying to this serial killer, which means they kind of didn't even come up with the idea, but they frame it like they did, of them being like that cartoon light bulb over the head moment of them being like, oh, we should frame this unknown serial killer for killing our mom. And I'm like, yeah, it was like, what, the 60s, the 50s? That would probably work.
Yeah.
That they weren't like doing forensics back then, I don't think. So, I mean,
they're probably just like, as long as I don't have to look at you anymore, I'll believe whatever you say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't make me look at you anymore. Whatever gets you out of here faster.
Yeah. Whatever, lady. That's fine. I've taken your statement. Now get out of here.
Ladies.
Ladies.
So, now we get more twisty lore. This is where they're going to start building Twisty up to be a little guy, parentheses, derogatory. He is my son and he has every disease. So Twisty lives in a bus in the woods. Some horror movies do this. And usually they'll give like kind of some example. Like, I don't know. They'll explain it a little bit. A lot has to happen for Twisty to live in a bus in the woods. This is my very specific brand of hyperfixation, where, like, I will notice something in a show or a movie, and I'm like, wait, there's a lot of lore that went into this little tiny detail. What do you mean?
Yeah, Twisty like, at the auto dealership.
Yeah. Like, a bus isn't the default house for a clown, is the thing, right?
Yeah,
like that's the thing I think they're like... He's like a threat to kids, I guess, is the idea. But also, like, clowns come from the circus, which the season already is.
Oh, I thought you were saying, like, he should be in a clown car, but he's so twisted.
Welcome to my fucked up mind.
A bus with one clown. What a god. This guy's crazy.
The inversion of the expectation.
He's like the opposite of a clown. Oh my god, it's like if you like had a whole semi truck pull up and they open the back and there's just like a single very small clown in it. Oh my god.
Oh my god.
What the fuck?
This sucks. I hate this. Where are the 50 little guys or the 50 big guys in the little car?
Jesus Christ, this is the new face of horror.
All because of woke. I hate this. Can't have 50 fellas in a tiny little comedically small car anymore because of woke.
All right, let's not get too political.
So back to my bus issue. So it's a school bus. And if I remember correctly, it's not just a school bus. It's a school bus that's, I think, on its side. If it's not on its side, it is definitely like wildly overgrown with like foliage. Like, it's been there like a while, and it is in the woods, which again, this was set in like the 50s, the 60s.
Yeah, I think 61.
I can't imagine we were using school buses like 100 years before this was shot, and it appears to be 100 years worth of aging on this bus in the woods that he lives in.
It is like a minimum 40 years of overgrowth. Yeah, like just to get like the reeds that long. Yeah.
And he has built like a cage into the back of it, which is odd given that they he hasn't done this before. But
just quick correction, 1952, sorry.
Oh, 1952. So even more so. Like, I doubt that even 30 years before that, we had buses like that. And also, who's driving them into the woods? Why was this driven into the woods? I don't know. And that girl who was like trying to bang earlier, her name is Bonnie. I forgot she's a reoccurring character. They do give her a name. She's Bonnie. And then also the kid that got stolen, Corey, they are in the back of the bus in the weird little cage. And I think they're tied up. I think their hands are like tied up. I don't know. And then they're like, or Bonnie is like, since she's the older one, is like trying to keep him calm. And it's like, we're going to get out of here. Don't worry. We'll figure this out. It's going to be okay. And then Twisty comes back and is like, oh, you guys are going to love this. I've got some real cool shit to show you. And they're like screaming and they hate it. And then he pulls out like a balloon animal and he does a little puppet show for them. By the way, Twisty doesn't talk. If I say he says something,
right, yeah,
that's a bit. He does not speak. He just does a lot of very animated eyes.
Body language. Body language at most. And yeah, very expressive eyes. Very expressive eyes on the murder clown.
A lot of eyebrow wiggles.
Yeah. Yeah, because then, let's see here. Yeah, because he does that, right? And then he, like, he starts to juggle. Oh, wait, yeah, never mind, sorry. I'm thinking of a different scene, yeah.
He juggles a lot, turns out.
This is just one where, he's, like, doing some tricks for people in a cage, and at one point, like, he pops a balloon, and they yell, because they're, you know, very on edge, and a balloon pops. And then I think he starts screaming and just, like, running around his own house and just, like, slamming stuff.
He starts tearing shit up.
So, doesn't make a lot of sense. That's not really a good behavior for your own bus house, I guess. this is.
I want to call back to this in another scene later, in our season, because I actually kind of like this because it bothers me. We touched on it a bit last time where, like, you don't really know what Twisty's deal is, and it's kind of cool because it's like, like, he's scary because he's, like, he's not, like, just a typical serial killer. Like, here's something going on. It's hard to understand. And I like that. And I hope they don't ruin it. But anyway.
Yeah, who could say?
That's all I wanted to say.
Like, a good example is, and I want to say, I'm not going to Google it, but I'm pretty sure this movie came out a long time after Freak Show. But, like, the movie Terrifier with Art the Clown, where it's just, like, a black and white clown who doesn't talk. That's one of the reasons why that particular character is so effective. You don't know what his deal is, but he obviously can, will, and wants to do something fucked up at all times. And that's why he's scary, because it's kind of mysterious of like, oh, man, what the fuck is that guy's deal? I don't want to be on the receiving end of that. I will say,
if you see this guy, you need to fucking go.
Yeah.
Why? Because you need to go. Yeah. What do you mean? You just need to be gone, man. Like, just fucking trust me. Yeah, that kind of thing. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's like scarier because
exactly.
I'm not even going to bother telling you. You need to be gone. You need to be gone. And Twisty kind of does that a little bit.
Yeah, he definitely, I mean, until you know, like, more of his backstory, he's definitely got, like, the edge of like, what the fuck is this guy's deal? I will admit, like, it's American Horror Story, so when I first saw Twisty the Clown for the first time, I was like, oh, it's because they think clowns are super scary. Got it. This is the horror element of this season, huh? That we got a fucked up dirty clown guy who doesn't talk. That's it. That's what we're working with. He's the bloody face,
right,
or whatever. He's the weird monsters that live outside the asylum. I want to point out, when he's doing his little show for Bonnie and Corey, before the balloon pops, he goes through like three different acts that he does. He does the thing that's like the stereotypical pulling like 50 handkerchiefs out of his pocket. And then at the end of the handkerchiefs is a tiny little baby rattle. And he just, like, starts shaking it. Like, is this is this anything? You guys like this? Is this good? And then Bonnie is like, whoa, that was so cool. You should let us go so we could go tell everybody how cool that was. And he's like, oh, you liked it? Here's more. Here's a puppet show. And she's like, fuck. And then that's when the balloon animal pops. And then they scream. And he hates it. He starts honking. They're honking. He starts throwing beach balls that I don't know where they came from around the bus and tearing shit up. And then that's the end of that scene. So, ta-da.
Just a weird guy at this point. Twisty's just a weird guy who occasionally decides to walk into someone random's house and stab them. That's the thing, right? It's like Twisty kind of already fell apart because why was he just like in a guy's house waiting? You know, like what did that guy do? There's no possible explanation that's going to be satisfying because he was just in a guy's house. That makes me even more mad about Twisty later on too, because Twisty does just kind of arbitrarily do things in later American Horror Story.
Yeah, like a dog or a ghost. Yes. we're back, unfortunately, to the hospital. They love showing us shots of the hospital where nothing happens, really. And Dot and Bette are, like, packing their stuff up to leave. Actually, I think they're at home at this point. They have left the hospital. They're at their house, I guess. And Elsa just shows up, because Elsa seems to have, like, an Apple AirTag on them. and has been able to track them down everywhere that they go. Maybe she did. Who could say?
The time between the hospital and them at the circus is like pretty confusing and vague. All you really need to know is like they will get to the circus and they're going to be under the care of Elsa. That's like the big thing here.
Yeah, that's the main takeaway. And also Elsa is like willing to break the law in order to make to facilitate that happening. But like Elsa somehow knows where they live. I think it was implied that she had already been to their house once because she's a little freak. And she decided that's where they would be again. And so showed up. And then she's like, oh, you escaped the hospital. And the twins are like, yeah, we were planning on skipping town. And then Elsa's like, well, this is the part where she's like, they're going to have to execute one of you. And if they do, you'll both die. And that is when I started Googling, like, all right.
That's not true. That's not true. You don't have to do that, actually.
Yeah. That feels like a human rights violation. And well, people definitely have done that in the past. I don't think they make a habit of it.
That's like a hard moral quandary is what that is. That's like a straight up, like, we need to have a council to meet on what we do about this. Like, it's that level like of just like moral problem. Yeah.
Yeah, like back in the day when it's like they wouldn't hang like a pregnant woman if she like killed some, you know what I mean? That kind of thing where it's like, all right, you got us here, you know, that kind of deal.
Yeah.
But, you know, who knows?
During my Googling when this was proposed, I checked to see if that had ever happened, even if a conjoined twin had done like a crime, like would both of them be charged, et cetera, et cetera.
Never. Or, a conjoined twin has never done a crime. They're naturally honorable.
Yeah, they are physically incapable of lying or violence.
I'm always saying this.
It's because they have two sets of brains and they're always communicating, so they know better. Yeah. They know that the correct thing to do would be tell the truth.
Yeah. One will start to do a crime and the other one will think, wait. Not so fast.
Yeah.
And then they just never do.
You know that like that little like the metaphor of like the devil on one shoulder and the angel on the other? Well, for conjoined twins, it's just two angels because they're conjoined. So they only have a limited amount of shoulders to share.
Yeah.
No, that tracks. Yeah.
This is science. I've done a science before.
Right.
Well, they have three shoulders total between them.
Oh, true.
And so there's like an angel on each outside, but only one devil in the middle. So it's like just not
he
a fair fight.
He gets outvoted. I think every time there's a vote, he loses. Yeah. Right.
A lot of 2-1 votes in the old ballot. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. So I looked it up. And the only time, like the only like big, like newsworthy time this has ever happened was actually the two guys who were conjoined, which is where we get the term Siamese twins. It was them. That's where like the phrase was coined, was because of these two specific men. One of them was a raging alcoholic and the other one wasn't. And the alcoholic one punched a guy in the face really hard and like sent him to the hospital. And they had to like decide like, does the other guy also like, is he an accomplice because he was there and like didn't physically restrain? Because like your brain, like even if you are conjoined twins, your brain has to be receiving some of the same signals from like anything below your neck, I would think. So like,
well,
can you just like grab your own hand, or is it like the thing where like you can't drown yourself because your like automatic instinct would be to not do that?
I hate human nature. I'm immediately like, well, who gets the cock?
I'm always asking
but
this.
Yeah, it's a good point. Like, how do you draw that line? Like, can you prove it? Because that seems like that's a whole thing. Like, I actually don't have control over the right arm. They do. Really? They don't seem to think so. And it's just like, yeah, how do you separate that argument?
Yeah. And the most concrete thing I could find was almost unanimously the entire world agrees that the at least capital punishment is not ever applicable to conjoined twins, just because it would always involve someone innocent potentially receiving the same penalty.
Unless they both agreed and signed a paper that said we're both doing this crime and then did it together.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
The perfect murder. Exactly.
The perfect murder where we got caught.
I mean, like, yeah, I was going to say, like, it's a 2-for-1 on killing someone getting caught. That's, like, kind of a bad hit rate, I think.
Ooh, but it really makes your resume look nice if you're that prosecutor, though. You got two people booked.
Yeah, 200% hit rate?
Yeah.
Damn, he's good.
Got them both in one. But then there was, like, as I was looking that up, I also, like, had, like, a whole train of thought of, like, well, what about, like, if one of them gets into college and they go to college, technically they both absorbed all the information there and potentially both took the same test. Do they both get a degree? Do they have to pay two tuitions?
Do you think in modern college, man, they would charge them for tuition twice? And if they didn't, they'd be like, put on these earmuffs. Don't learn a damn thing. We'll know.
Absolutely, yes.
These conjoined twins got it made. I got to tell you, like, no crimes, just like free college. You know, it's kind of a sweet deal when you think about it.
Two wives or husbands or partners, like, every time, just 10 out of 10. There's literally no like, losing.
You cheated on me. Nope, the twin. Oh, not again.
Oh, that loophole. Yeah.
Keep the old spicy twin.
We can never let our husbands talk. If they both find out we've been cheating, but the other one's been cheating, then they'll know that means we're both cheating.
Sorry, I went into her mind palace while you guys were banging. So technically I was there too. I was also having sex. Oh my god, the worst roommate of all time. So there were a lot of questions I had and none of them got answered really. And then they like do a flashback, and it's a flashback because they slap a batshit insane dark crimson red sepia filter over it.
It's like ye olde horror framing.
Yeah, it's like blood red. It looks like a really like edgy, like blingy picture on like MySpace. It's wild. And it's extra wild because like that's the kind of thing you usually do in like a TV show or a movie when you're showing like something that was like 100+ years ago. Not 7 days ago, which is when this flashback is set. And, like, they do a flashback to, I'm assuming we're in the twins' head, because I don't think they're, like, saying this out loud, or maybe they are, of, like, Bette getting yelled at by their mom, who is still alive at this point, because she wanted to, like, see a movie, because all Bette cares about is the pictures. And I guess they were going for, like, a Carrie-type thing, where the mom was like, no, you can't go out in public, because they'll murder you for being a witch or whatever. And like
your swag too hot, your style too real. Mm-hmm. They'll kill you. Like, they're trying to debate like, oh, it's fine. We'll just like wear a big hat and go into the movie. Who gives a shit? Like, no, we're not doing this again. We're not trying the big cowboy hat strategy.
The trench coat.
Until eventually, Bette like just escalates to the point where she's screaming like, I want to see the movie in the theater now, and then just kind of like reflex stabs their mom.
Yeah. Which I like.
Yeah.
This is like, I guess one of the few, like I'm really giving them a lot of credit. The few times in this season where I was like, okay, like that wasn't like a great twist, but I feel like most people probably expected that Dot was the one who did the killing. Yeah. Because she's like the cynical bitchy mm-hmm. one. Having Bette, the like airheaded bimbo one, be the actual killer, and Dot being the like more like the morally better one, I guess. That subverted my expectation enough that
expectations.
I was like, yeah. Okay. Like when I first saw it, I was like, okay, that was a unique, that was not where I thought, because boy howdy does American Horror Story love to either A, color inside the lines so precisely that it looks like you printed out the picture, or be so wildly outside the lines that it doesn't make sense to anybody, and if you try to question it, they're like, fuck you.
You can't tell what it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And this is like a I agree. It's a good subversion just because we totally expect Bette to be the one who is just like getting excited and lying and getting swept up, and that's why there's so much pressure on from Dot. But it's like, no, okay, yeah, it just actually was the one who did the stabbing. But then like they immediately also kind of blow that up by being like, well, you didn't stop it, Dot, and you were like acutely aware and in control of your emotions in person because apparently the person talking to you can also see the flashback. But like, has that awareness of like, you could have stopped this, and kind of makes a good point of like, yeah, probably. Maybe.
Yeah, well, yeah. That was the other thing, yeah. Is like, in that scene where you actually see where it happens, where they end up killing their mom, because like, they don't show it up until now, which is why it's like a twist. I would argue that like, even if you can read someone's thoughts at like no lag time, absolutely no delay, there are times where I have thoughts and my body does not do the thing I thought to do until like a good buffer happens,
for sure.
So like, Bet kind of just like, it's not like a planned thing, she just kind of impulse kills her mom. Yeah. I don't think that even if they were two separate people that Dot and Bet said I'm going to kill our mom, that like Dot would have been able to react fast enough to stop it.
Oh, for sure. And I agree. Yeah. This isn't my argument. This is the show's argument, where they directly say, like, Dot, you did this, which is just like, but she didn't, though. Like, she just was there. Yeah, it's like the same thing. Like, if Liz and I were hanging out and you're just like, slow beef killing time, and just like left over there with a knife and I didn't stop you in time, that'd be ridiculous.
Me when I fucking get slow beef.
You'd be responsible.
Slow beef getting time.
Not again.
When I finally get slow beef. This is always happening. And historically, every time the three of us have hung out, that is all Ty is doing is trying to keep me from killing Sobe.
I don't know why I keep inviting both of them to the same place. It seems
it's
like a really
of the
bad
lobster
job
guy
on my part.
Yeah.
It's the lobster guy. He just loves both of you.
Yeah. My best friend, the lobster guy, Evan Peters. So that's what happened with Bet and Dot. Then Dot does a confusing thing, which this doesn't have any like legal implications because they would just be dead if this happened, so they don't have to really think about whether it's important or not. Dot stabs Bet because Dot felt guilty. That's the whole reason they were in the hospital, by the way. It's not like super clear that that's why they're in the hospital, but that is why they're in the hospital. So would this be suicide or murder is where I was going with the first part of that. Is it both?
Depends. I think it's attempted something. It's attempted something for sure.
Yeah, like is she, because like couldn't you just be like, oh, well, I was just trying to kill myself. And then
you can do two crimes at the same time. In that case, I think it would be attempted suicide and involuntary manslaughter at the same time, right?
You know what? Actually, probably. Because, like, either that or their argument's just going to be, well, you knew. You knew it would kill the other one, so.
You were trying to kill her, and you were just like, and if I go down with the ship, life's a bitch. And, like, that's not a legal out.
Bro, just trust me, my legal defense. So like Dot stabbed Bet. I'm not gonna say anything more, but I just want everybody to remember this exact moment right now in the show. Everybody who's listening, remember this scene. That's all I'm gonna say. And then years from now we will open up this time capsule and I will explain why. Not in this episode, not in the next episode. Who knows when we'll get to it.
I'm interested in this, yeah.
And then that's
a little teaser. Sorry, guys.
Yeah, that's our little teaser. They survive. Again, we went over this in our last episode, so I won't spend too much time on it. The timeline for this, not stabbing timeline typically. You don't usually hang out in your house for 7 days, like, actively bleeding. Usually stabbing and getting stabbed is a one-and-done situation, unless you have, like, a non-lethal wound that you can't really care for, like, in a survival scenario.
We need a very slow crash cart. We need a cart for somebody who's been stabbed, but we have like a lot of time. Do we make those? No, we only make ones for people who are going to die very quickly when they've been stabbed. There's gotta be a reason for that, huh? Yeah. Because there's a lot of hanging out at the house with a stab wound. There's a lot of investigators just being like, the number one suspect, we'll get around to them. Like, we'll circle back to that at some point. How fast could they be?
Yeah, it's what, like 1952? Who gives a shit? Yeah, I think if you survive a stab wound for more than, like, I would go as far as to say, like, an hour, at that point, you're healing. I think your body has started healing it, and I think you're going to live. Unless, like, an infection
unless
takes hold.
Infection.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, basically, yeah.
The stab wound itself is no longer life-threatening.
I think doctors would advise against a lobster finger blast, but, you know, other than that, yeah, you're on your way back.
I mean, but most doctors would say, I'm not a cop. If you want a little lobster, I mean, I don't have any evidence
to
prove it.
It's medical advice, but you do you.
I can't tell you how to live your life.
Slay, queen.
And then...
Queens.
Yeah, queens. Elsa, like, touches their faces at the same time, which I hate. And it, like, then it cuts to... Okay, so when... You remember how a second ago I said... Or a second ago, at the beginning of this episode, I said there were many times that they should have cut this episode. This scene is where they should have... Full stop. And I'm not... This isn't even, like, in my mind, up for debate. This should have been the final scene of the episode, because this is now... The opposite shot of our very first opening scene, because we are now seeing it from the perspective of Bet instead of Dot, who was the opening scene. And it has the exact same, like, it's the exact same framing, exact same lighting, exact same costume, exact same tone, except for Dot.
It also bookends with the opening, which was them describing, like, hey, here's a little story all about how my life got flipped, turned upside down, went to a little circus with my sister right here. Like, that kind of, that's the opening, and now they're at the circus.
Except for it was Dot, so just like that, but, like, imagine she's pissed off about it and sad.
Fresh Prince opening, but he's very mad.
Yeah, so exactly that. The Fresh Prince opening, but he's very mad. And now we're getting the Fresh Prince opening, parentheses, he's hyped as hell. He loves this. Because Dot is like, she's the exact opposite. She's like, this kicks ass. I love this. This is awesome. This is the best day of my life. Whereas at the beginning of the episode, Dot was like, this is the worst day of my life. This place sucks. I remember exactly the day that this happened. It was so traumatizing for me. This fucking sucks. Yeah. That would be the perfect way
to
book
in an office. I just wanted to type notes for a guy moving numbers around, and then you have, Bet on the other side being like, "Wee, the circus."
We fucking love the circus. Woo. Yeah. I'm not even like, I don't even think it's like subjective. I think that was from a like filmmaking perspective, the time to end the episode. Like, everything else either needed to be cut out on the editing room floor or needed to be in the next episode, because that, as far as this episode and the content of it has been, was the absolute perfect time to bookend the episode.
Setup's done. It's well put together. There's like a construction going on. Even if it's not perfectly executed, it's like there's a clear arc they're doing over the course of it. And like, the episode is long enough that like having a measurable arc is probably not a bad idea.
Yeah. And you know, there's this kind of underlying theme they have going on of completely parallel experiences for the twins. It seems as though perhaps maybe even this season will center around the twins, at least largely. So it would make sense that, like, the perfect way to end an episode and a show thus far that heavily, heavily draws on the, not metaphor, but, like, the symbolism of conjoined twins and twins in general, would be to have twin scenes at the beginning and the end of the episode. I regret to inform everybody that even though we have been talking for 55 minutes, we've only covered roughly 13 minutes of episode, and there is still a significant amount of episode left.
Holy shit. There's so much shit in this episode. It's crazy. I don't know. They were like, we want to do a movie. Like, this would have been the one time that the American Horror Stories format, the ones like the bonus eps where it's like a whole thing in one episode, kind of would have been like appropriate, because this is like that fucking long. And no, this is just the intro, which is like really bold. But I think, yeah, I think Liz is right. Like, if it would have stopped here, it would have been like, damn, that's bold, but that's like a strong intro. Like, you're doing some powerful characters, you're doing some like a little bit of intrigue, a little bit of mystery, this, that, the other. All right, I'm into it. But they're like, you haven't met the Meepster yet.
Everybody's favorite boy. Oh my God.
Fucking Meep.
Yeah. Again, I hate Meep. Cannot overstate that there is still, I think, like roughly 30 minutes of episode left after this. We are obviously not going to get to them today, but this scene, the way that it, because the episode keeps fucking going, even though that was the perfect ending to this episode, the episode keeps going for at least 30 more minutes.
But Ty, we haven't got to the musical number yet. That's a great point.
Yeah. Do you have 25 more minutes? Because we'll get there. And I don't know, maybe future Liz will also be pissed off that the fucking musical number is also not the end of the episode. Who could say?
Madness.
We'll check in with future Liz next week. So now they have decided to continue this scene instead of ending the episode and having this be the opening of the next episode. They're just continuing it. As though someone has told a joke and then just keeps repeating it, hoping to hear more laughter. And we see Dot's perspective of, like, looking around the circus for the first time. And they walk through a big Satan mouth in front of the circus. And I feel like every time something circus or clown is related in this show, the creators of this show pull on different things that they think are clown related that have not been thus far. So far, we have a school bus, ice cream trucks in Colt. They were very insistent that clowns rode around in ice cream trucks in Colt, which is not a thing, in case you're wondering. Nope. Clowns don't spend a lot of time in ice cream trucks. That's not a stereotype. And then this season, Satan, they're like, yeah, circuses and Satan, not there. And then we're like, hey, are you maybe thinking of haunted houses? And they're like, no, I'm pretty sure it's circuses.
They're like, yeah, it's circuses. Sometimes they have like a spooky like House of Mirrors, and you're like, the House of Mirrors is not supposed to be scary. It's not implicitly scary. It's that you get chased into the House of Mirrors by something. That's what makes it scary. And like, oh, what pisses me off about this is like, clown lore has plenty of spooky stuff in it. Like, you could do all sorts of things with clown eggs, and that would be a whole nightmare season in and of itself. But no, they don't talk about clown eggs for a minute in this show. They don't do their research.
It's bullshit.
They don't know what they're doing.
I think probably they saw, like, I don't know, the movie It, and they were like, ah, clowns and Satan? Yeah.
I think I saw Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Yeah.
Because there were a lot of spooky clowns on that show. Yeah.
I think it's like, listen, I'm not someone who finds clowns scary. I know a lot of people do, but like, I don't find clowns scary. So for me, clowns are a square is a rectangle, et cetera, et cetera, like paradox, where like, not, there are some clowns that are scary, but not all clowns are meant to be scary, if that makes sense. Like, even though clowns are pretty unanimously despised, in theory, they are meant to be beloved by children. They are not all supposed to be horrifying, malicious monster murderers. They are, at their core, supposed to be funny little guys who bring joy to children. It's just more so that we don't really see a lot of positive clown representation in most media. Usually they are killing or eating someone. Most of the time, it's a child. So they're not, like, beloved by most, I think. Which is a shame for clowns, I think. I think that hot clown girl from Ace Attorney really turned the general public's opinion on clowns around.
Yeah. Finally, people starting to recognize the value. God. And like, clowning is like a professional trained art, right? Like, there's like schools and degrees and stuff. Like, clowns are like a thing. Yeah.
Let's not go nuts here, but yeah, all right.
Clown
sure,
school?
Yeah,
are we not respecting clown school now? I gotta leave this podcast.
I mean, it's like, what, juggling? And then, like, you have to aim your little flower squirt? I don't know. Like, that's, like, two classes. I feel like you get your master's in clown and if you can juggle, personally, but, you know.
I'm not saying it's, like, a master's course, Beef. I'm not saying it's, like, an eight-year program to get your fucking clown degree. It's, like, trade school. I know.
Wait a minute. You're not even dressed like a clown. Oh, I went for my PhD. Like, oh, that's a good point, Dr. Juggles. Yeah, like, I get it, but, you know.
Professor Jiggly.
Fucking Dr. Juggles PhD. Now there's a horror clown. There we go. Okay, should we cut it there though, as far as this part?
Yeah.
And then have one final part where we talk about the part that really clearly should have been another episode, because they're like walking up to the circus and getting ready to meet all of the new characters. So like, this is for you too. This is so you don't have to remember who the fuck the Meepster is when we bring him up next week.
Yeah, exactly. But
I can't wait.
So till next time, everybody. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you for the next one.
Bye.
Later.